The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
When was the last time you changed your home air filter? Did you know your home air filter can actually keep your home cleaner? Filter Easy solves the number one problem with home air filters: forgetting to change them. Filter Easy keeps dust levels down and helps filter out airborne allergens. With Filter Easy, you won't ever forget to change the air filters in your home again. You will also save 5 to 15% on home air conditioning costs by keeping your home air conditioning and heating systems cleaner. Get started today. FilterEasy.com is offering all the Face the Nation listeners their first delivery of standard 1-inch air filters at a price you'll love, and with free shipping. Never forget to change your air filter again and visit FilterEasy.com/FTN or enter code FTN on the homepage. FilterEasy.com/FTN or enter promo code FTN on the homepage. FilterEasy. You won't ever forget to change the air filters in your home again.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Kim Jong-un responds to President Trump.
Kim also called Mr. Trump a rogue and a gangster fond of playing with fire.
Facebook vows to fight propaganda.
We can't prevent all governments from all interference, but we can make it harder.
Later, the Iran deal on the rocks? We speak to Germany's ambassador to the U.S.
So we think it is a clear plus for security.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. The war of words is continuing between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
President Trump fired the latest shot in his verbal battle with North Korea's leader, tweeting, quote, "Kim Jong-un of North Korea, who is obviously a madman who doesn't mind starving or killing his people, will be tested like never before." In a statement read on Korean state television, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said, "We will control the mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire." Dotard, translated in Korean, is a derogatory reference to an old person. Kim also called Mr. Trump a rogue and a gangster fond of playing with fire. The latest war of words between the two world leaders comes after President Trump called North Korea's leader Rocket Man on a suicide mission and vowed to totally destroy the country during his United Nations speech. President Trump reiterated his statements while discussing new sanctions.
North Korea's nuclear weapons and missile development is a grave threat to peace and security in our world.
Hours after Kim Jong-un's statement, North Korea's foreign minister said his country may test a hydrogen bomb in the Pacific Ocean. Nikki Batiste for CBS News, New York.
On Friday, Republican Senator John McCain announced his opposition to another last-ditch effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. The legislation is sponsored by fellow Republican senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy.
The Graham-Cassidy bill would keep Obamacare's taxes in place, but turn most of the revenues over to the states to come up with their own health care systems. Former President Obama, in a rare public appearance, argued that some states might allow insurers to once again charge more for pre-existing conditions.
It's certainly frustrating to have to mobilize every couple of months to keep our leaders from inflicting real human suffering on our constituents.
Cassidy insists his plan does meet what he has dubbed the Jimmy Kimmel test after the late night host whose infant son has a heart defect. Kimmel himself slammed the plan.
He failed his own test. And this guy, Bill Cassidy, just lied right to my face.
Now all eyes are on possible GOP holdouts. President Trump at the UN told his party to pass the plan now.
I thought that when I won, I would go to the Oval Office, sit down at my desk, and there would be a health care bill on my desk, to be honest.
Senate rules give Republicans until next Saturday to pass a health care plan with a simple majority. That's why Graham Cassidy is suddenly on the fast track, even though the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says it will not have time to determine just how many people might lose coverage as a result of the bill. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Also on Friday, the Trump administration took two new actions, rolling back Obama-era rules for colleges investigating cases of sexual assault and signaling it's moving forward with tougher measures to screen and stop some foreign visitors to the U.S. Facebook CEO says he'll give congressional investigators the contents of 3,000 ads a Russian agency bought during the run-up to last year's presidential election.
We can do better.
In a live appearance on Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg admitted Russians found it easy to place election-related ads on the social network without being discovered.
Most ads are bought programmatically through our apps and website without an advertiser ever speaking to someone at Facebook.
Facebook has also admitted that its internal investigation found more than 3,000 election-related ads costing more than $100,000 paid for by a Russian company with links to the Kremlin. Facebook said the vast majority of ads didn't specifically reference the U.S. presidential election or a particular candidate, but appeared to focus on amplifying divisive social and political messages. The ads have not been made public, but will now be turned over to congressional investigators. For months, however, Facebook denied there was any evidence that Russians had paid for election-related advertising. Senator Mark Warner is vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
I feel like Facebook finally has been responsive, but the proof will be in the extent of the materials they give us next week, and then will they continue to work with us to identify other sites that may have originated in Russia. They've identified one Russian troll farm.
The identity of ad buyers should not have been a mystery to Facebook, says internet security expert Hemu Nagam.
They would know that those IP addresses are coming from, in this case, an enemy nation state that often people call Russia.
Zuckerberg promised to make it easier for users to identify who is paying for political advertising on Facebook.
We can't prevent all governments from all interference, but we can make it harder.
The issues raised in the ads and the fact that they were targeted at specific parts of the country has raised suspicion the Russians may have had some help from inside the United States. John Blackstone, CBS News, San Francisco.
CBS News has confirmed former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort was under FBI surveillance before and after the 2016 election. The development comes as investigators probe his contacts with Russia.
While he was Trump campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, through an intermediary, sent a message to a Russian billionaire closely tied to the Kremlin. According to the Washington Post, 2 weeks before President Trump's nomination, Manafort sent an email intended for Oleg Deripaska. In the email, written on July 7, 2016, Manafort offered to keep Deripaska informed about the campaign. If he needs private briefings, we can accommodate. Manafort's spokesman did not deny the authenticity of the email, but called the message innocuous and said, "It's no secret Mr. Manafort was owed money by past clients," implying it was an attempt to collect. Manafort's ties to Deripaska date back to at least 2005 and a deal to advance the interest of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Leaks about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's activities have accelerated in recent days, along with reports President Trump's activities are now being closely scrutinized. The New York Times reported Mueller's office sent a document to the White House that detailed 13 different areas that investigators want more information about. Among them, this year's resignation of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, the firing of FBI Director James Comey, and this meeting in the Oval Office a day later between President Trump and top Russian officials, in which Mr. Trump said Comey's firing relieved great pressure on him. Mueller has also worked with a grand jury in Washington to question witnesses and obtain search warrants. Peter Zeidenberg is a former federal prosecutor who worked with him.
How would you describe him as a prosecutor?
As a manager, he's very no-nonsense, very by the book, doesn't fool around, moves straight ahead.
Jeff Begay's CBS News, Washington.
Still to come, as President Trump considers backing out of the Iran deal, world powers are coming to its defense.
So we stand by that deal.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. It was a big week at the United Nations where leaders from around the world gathered for its annual General Assembly. In addition to North Korea, Iran was also a focus of President Trump's speech as he took aim at that international nuclear deal with the country.
That deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it.
More from correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
I think it went very well.
After his speech, President Trump told reporters he thinks the UN has great, great potential. In his remarks, he said the organization is focused too much on bureaucracy and not enough on results. In keeping with his America First pledge, Mr. Trump vowed not to enter into one-sided deals. He called on nations to respect each other's sovereignty. but violent regimes often cite their sovereignty, defending themselves against Western condemnation.
Stephen Portnoy reporting from New York. Let's talk now with German Ambassador to the U.S., Peter Wittig. Thanks for talking with us.
It's a pleasure to be on your show.
I want to get your reaction to President Trump's speech to the United Nations. What did you think?
There were parts in it that were fairly friendly to the United Nations and to that forum and to all the leaders that were assembled. He enumerated the projects that he supported run by the United Nations, but there was always an element where he chided a couple of countries. On top of it, of course, North Korea and Iran and Venezuela. So there was a little bit of a name-calling that was to be expected. And, of course, we watched it very closely, the first speech of the new American president in that forum. And I think his speech will give rise to a lot of discussion.
On North Korea, Germany has an embassy in Pyongyang, I believe. North Korea has one in Berlin. Is there anything Germany can offer then in helping ease tensions on the Korean Peninsula?
Well, first of all, it's important to have a channel of communication, and the United States supports us, I mean, at least the State Department, in having that embassy. We usually share our impressions of life and the political leadership in North Korea with our American friends, so it is a useful tool to assess the situation. We are using those contacts as well. We were the first to implement the sanctions, we cut down all the trade with North Korea. So on that front, we are very consequential and rigorous. But for us, this embassy in Pyongyang gives us sort of a window into this reclusive and difficult to understand regime.
So you don't imagine there will ever be a time when Germany would kick out North Korea, like some other countries have been doing, and withdrawing perhaps their own ambassadors from North Korea?
Well, that's not on the table right now. I cannot exclude anything for the future. But for the time being, we are there supported by the U.S. In our presence in Pyongyang.
What about the president's remarks on the Iran deal, Ambassador Wittig, calling it an embarrassment to the U.S.? Germany, of course, was central to those negotiations. What do you think of his comments on perhaps the future of it?
Well, let me sketch our position on the Iran deal. It is not a perfect deal, but it is a deal that was concluded not between the United States and Iran, but it was a multilateral deal. It was concluded by the three European countries, Germany, France, and Great Britain, and Russia, and China, and the U.S., of course, with Iran. So we had to take into consideration all of those countries, and we achieved the best we could. It is the best unprecedented inspection regime of any treaty ever concluded, at least in recent memory. So we think it is a clear plus for security, not only regionally, but globally. So we stand by that deal, and we think it would be a mistake to rescind it.
The U.S. is considering withdrawing from that deal. Should it be renegotiated?
Well, I'm not privy to inside information as to what the U.S. Will do, and we'll discuss it when there's a decision on that.
If it does withdraw from the deal, how do you think Germany would react?
We will stand by this deal.
All right. How do you describe the relationship between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and President Trump?
It's a good, productive relationship. The two leaders met on several occasions. The chancellor came here in the month of March. The president developed a friendly and cordial and businesslike relationship with her. They had very productive discussions over 4.5 hours. They met after that a couple of times on the occasion of international meetings. They speak very frequently on the phone. So I think they developed, in the meantime, a relationship of respect and a relationship that is very productive.
Let me ask you this. What do you think is next, then, for U.S. and German relations?
We, I think, work on some issues together. First and foremost, the fight against terrorism. We are an active member on the of the anti-ISIL coalition. We are fighting shoulder to shoulder against terrorism in Afghanistan. We have we are the second largest troop contributor after the U.S. in Afghanistan. So there are many regional issues where we really stand together. We are both important NATO members, and this is important for us. There are some trade-related issues where we have differences. We are not friends of protectionism. We are adherents of an open, liberal, rule-based international trade order. So there we have certain divergences of views. Also in the climate policy, we are friends of the Paris Climate Agreement. But regardless of those differences, the relationship between this administration and my government is a very constructive and productive one.
German Ambassador to the U.S., Peter Wittig, it's good talking with you.
Thank you.
Some top scientists say they were wrong about the pace of climate change.
Climatologist Michael Grubb once declared the reductions of fossil fuels needed to meet climate change targets were so drastic, no democracy would ever be able to impose them. But now,
it looks more achievable than I used to think.
That's because the world isn't warming as fast as previous models suggested, possibly because China's exceeded expectations in tackling its greenhouse gas emissions, and the West has upped its reliance on solar and wind energy faster than most experts thought possible. Vicky Barker, CBS News.
Up next, the challenges facing rescue crews digging through collapsed buildings to find survivors after Mexico City's earthquake.
One of the concerns is that the building could collapse further, and that could endanger people who may well be inside.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS News Radio podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand, or hear original audio programming like our weekend review show, The Weekend Roundup. Get politics, policy, and a side of pop culture with White House correspondent Major Garrett on our newest show, The Takeout. Get these podcasts and more from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Rescue crews are still trying to sift through the rubble from the devastating earthquake in Mexico City, looking for survivors. CBS News correspondent Chris Martinez is there and has this report.
A rescuer shimmies into a crawl space at a collapsed elementary school in Mexico City. Then, with raised fists, other rescuers ask for silence so they can listen for signs of life beneath the rubble. More than 50 survivors have been pulled to safety throughout the region, but it's a race against time as soldiers, police, firefighters, and citizens dig through the debris. Mexico City remains a dangerous place. Nearly 40 buildings here have already collapsed. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Mexico City.
BBC correspondent Regini Vaidyanathan is in Mexico City. Thanks for talking with us.
Good to be with you.
What have you seen while you've been covering the earthquake that's really struck you?
Well, I am at one of the buildings that collapsed in the La Condesa neighborhood in Mexico City. Now, the building that I'm looking at was a six-story office block, and it now is just a huge pile of concrete and twisted metal. You can see some bits of office furniture sitting on top of it. But now that really is the focus of the rescue efforts here. Now, defense officials told us in the last few hours that there were 70 people working in that building at the time when the quake hit. They have already rescued some 28 people from the building. Everyone they've found so far has been alive. So people here are certainly holding out hope. And I can see dozens of members of the Mexican police in their uniforms, also members of the Mexican military. Many of them are wearing white face masks as well because there's a lot of dust still in the air here. But as well as that, there are also dozens of family members, those who were in the building who are waiting anxiously for news of their loved ones. I spoke to a mother named Dolores, whose son Juan was working on the fourth floor of the building as an accountant. He was in the building. She'd spoken to him in the morning on Tuesday, since the earthquake struck at Tuesday lunchtime, and she hasn't heard from him since. But she is praying and hoping that he is in there alive. And one glimmer of hope for a lot of the relatives here is that rescuers say one of the things they are doing is they're focusing their efforts on the fourth floor of this building, where they think there might be 10 people who are huddled together waiting to be rescued. Now, of course, it's difficult to know exactly what is going on inside the building, but what we're hearing here is that a WhatsApp message was sent from one of the group. So they are trying to access the fourth floor of the building. But I should say, one of the concerns, really, you look at this building, it is just one big pile now. It's hard to even imagine that it was a towering office building. But one concern is that it could collapse further. So I've seen a lot of rescue workers go in with these long planks of wood. And what they are trying to do is to use those to stabilize the building, because one of the concerns is that the building could collapse further, and that could endanger people who may well be inside.
How much of a concern, then, are more earthquakes or aftershocks?
That is always a concern in the aftermath of an earthquake, but that really isn't something many people are talking about here. One thing I've been really struck by is just how focused people are in helping others, whether that is obviously focused on the rescue efforts, even though it's been 48 hours since this quake struck. People really are holding out hope. And so there is a sense of optimism, even though when you look around at this city that is scarred by the effects of the earthquake, people really are feeling some sense of hope.
BBC correspondent Regini Vaidyanavan in Mexico City. Puerto Rico and other parts of the Caribbean are trying to rebuild after Hurricane Maria left behind a wake of devastation. Correspondent David Begno is in San Juan.
There's a report from Puerto Rico's largest newspaper saying that three sisters were killed in a mudslide that swept them away. A fourth sister was able to run away and call for help. Amid this debris and under the cover of darkness, crews work through the night to rescue people who have no way of calling for help because the communication grid is down. And then there are those people still living in their homes, too grateful to complain.
The only nightlights in Puerto Rico were the lamplights of more than 3 million people living in darkness. With no electricity or running water, families in Cataño grilled their food in groups.
Why is it that I've not seen anyone around here complain about their situation?
Because we are a small town. We are really humble people, and we are grateful for the chance we got to live another day.
Buenas noches.
A few miles west of here in Toa Baja, at least 200 people are staying at a shelter with limited beds. But these women are making sure no one here is hungry.
Gracias.
Leslie Centeno Rodriguez manages the shelter.
Además de darle alimento.
In addition to giving people food, she said, we must also give them hope. Earlier in Toa Baja, Puerto Rico's National Guard moved quickly to get this 83-year-old woman to a hospital. Rescues like this are becoming routine, as the once vibrant island is paralyzed by floodwater. People looking for help piled into the back of military trucks. Others help themselves, trudging through waist-deep water in an attempt to reach drier ground. Despite the devastation, there are those moments of joy, like when these brothers were reunited for the first time since the hurricane hit.
At the UN, Cuba's foreign minister, Bruno Rodriguez, responded to concerns his country has been behind the mysterious attacks targeting American and Canadian diplomats, causing them mild traumatic brain injury, hearing loss, and other medical issues. Rodriguez, through an interpreter,
Cuba has never perpetrated, nor will it ever perpetrate actions of this sort.
Rodriguez also says Cuba would never allow another country to attack diplomats there. We've learned a top U.S. security official at the American embassy was among the 21 confirmed victims. Meanwhile, an internal document from the State Department obtained by CBS News shows the U.S. knew about the severity of the attacks that began in November 2016, long before it made them public. Protesters seeking an independent region of Spain have taken over parts of Barcelona.
Police are cracking down on pro-independence groups on the streets of Barcelona. Demonstrators are angry the government is stopping them from holding a vote to take full control of the Catalonia region. Tens of thousands have packed the city's tourist district, as well as several other Spanish cities, waving red and yellow flags and chanting slogans to support democracy. This protester says, "We want to vote because we have the right to decide." Spanish authorities say the vote is illegal and they've seized 10 million ballots and stacks of campaign leaflets and flyers. Spain's Prime Minister is urging Catalan leaders to stop the violence and observe the law. So far, police have arrested more than a dozen demonstrators, including senior officials in the Catalan government. Gavin Ramjorn for CBS News, London.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, an urgent response to a hepatitis outbreak in San Diego. Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio. And I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Amazon may have unintentionally helped terrorists find the supplies they need to build bombs. Here's correspondent Mark Phillips in London.
The main explosive in the London subway bomb didn't go off. Building a functioning bomb is complicated. But an investigation here has revealed that getting ingredients needed to make a simple bomb has become easier than ever.
The reason: internet shopping. Ask for any of the well-known bomb-making essentials, sulfur, for example. And under the frequently bought together heading, Amazon helpfully suggests you might also want charcoal, needed for black powder explosive. Ask for another essential, potassium nitrate, for example, and the site suggests sulfur and charcoal. Dig a little deeper, and battery terminals, presumably for the detonator, and ball bearings, possibly for shrapnel, come up.
The algorithms behind these shopping hints may be based on the buying patterns of amateur fireworks makers and backyard rocket scientists.
You can be testing.
But former bomb disposal officer Chris Hunter says the lists might encourage and help others.
Those people that, you know, are off the radar have been radicalized individually.
You're talking wannabe bomb makers.
That's right, yeah. If an individual isn't 100% sure exactly what components he or she needs, it does give them that missing ingredient and that missing part of the jigsaw.
There's no proof any terrorist bomb has been made from web-bought ingredients, and Amazon says it's now reviewing its practices. But the web is full of bomb-making tips, including the U.S. Army's own explosives and demolition handbook, marked down to just over $8. Mark Phillips, CBS News, London.
London has stripped Uber of its license to operate there. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is in London with more.
The decision not to renew the company's license affects 40,000 drivers and over 3 million Londoners who click on Uber as a cheaper alternative to the city's costly black cabs.
City officials will allow Uber to operate, however, until a lengthy appeals process is exhausted. A real-life NCIS drama is playing out over Snapchat photos of two female Navy corpsmen acting inappropriately with newborns in their care.
One of the nurses was caught in pictures making an infant dance to rap music. The other gave the finger to another baby with a caption, "How I currently feel about these mini Satans." That's not sitting well with the Navy Surgeon General, who has ordered an immediate review of policies at all Navy medical commands. The two corpsmen have been removed from patient care. They could face charges once the NCIS probe is finished. Bill Rakoff, CBS News.
There's an urgent push to control a hepatitis A outbreak among homeless people and drug users in San Diego.
Well, you're good to go. Thanks for coming in.
Lines are long and constant at pop-up clinics around San Diego, where hundreds of people waited to get free hepatitis A vaccines. City workers have been out in full force, bleaching down sidewalks and benches.
This outbreak could last for at least another 6 months.
There's a desperate race against time to stop the hepatitis A virus from spreading, especially among the area's homeless and drug users. Dr. Nick Ifantidis is San Diego's chief medical officer.
It's not as easy as just saying, hey, get vaccinated. The nature of some of these members of this population are such that they are inaccessible. And frankly, some of them have their reluctances in dealing with government.
Hepatitis A spreads when someone comes in direct contact with an infected person's human waste. 22,000 vaccines have been administered, and the city is now setting up washing stations. Kevin Faulkner is San Diego's mayor.
We're going to have more additional shelters to help get people off the street, get them the help that they need.
Steven Zalesi, president of San Diego's Food and Beverage Association, which represents 1,200 businesses, believes the city should have been doing more long before this outbreak.
Where were they 2 or 3 or 4 years ago? It's great that they're coming up with some solutions now, but they're really closing the barn door after the horse has already left.
Los Angeles just declared its own hepatitis outbreak. Cases here in Santa Cruz County in Northern California and Arizona have all been traced back to the San Diego outbreak. Right now, health officials are racing to try and vaccinate 40,000 homeless people here in LA County. Mireya Villarreal, CBS News, Los Angeles.
The virus is transmitted through feces. Music therapy is getting more attention for the benefits it may offer to patients.
Focus on the sound of the instrument for a bit. Close your eyes.
After a frightening breast cancer diagnosis at 43, Julian Newmark was overwhelmed with anxiety and suffered from insomnia. She turned to music therapy during radiation for relief.
He taught me how to relax while I was having the music therapy, and also to remember those techniques when I was home.
How stressful is it for patients when they come in this radiation room?
Well, for many patients, very stressful.
In the first study of its kind in a hard science journal, Mount Sinai Beth Israel music coordinator Andrew Rossetti researched the benefits of music therapy for cancer patients.
It uses music and verbal processing to lower anxiety.
From classical to hard rock, they personalized the playlist for each patient. They found it worked so well before and during treatment, patients saw their stress and anxiety drop by at least 20%. Today, Julia is cancer-free, but continues the therapy once a week for relaxation.
It helped me so much through one of the worst moments in my life that now is helping me with other important aspects and things that I wanted to do.
Staying healthy is at the top of that list. Meg Oliver, CBS News, New York.
No surprise here. If you want to make money, turn to tech.
Rick Love is switching careers at the age of 45. The former job recruiter is taking classes to become a web developer.
There's a ton of opportunity out there. And that was a big reason.
Those same constructors.
That opportunity for a good job is why many students have come to the New York Code and Design Academy.
How many of you are here because you think the job market's going to be good in these fields? I think that's everybody.
And a new report agrees. CareerBuilder.com found since 2010, new jobs for app, software, and web developers have all seen major growth.
Technology's number one.
Career Builder's Jennifer Grass says the medical field is another industry that's growing. More than 300,000 registered nurses and 250,000 home health aides have been hired in the past 7 years, thanks in part to aging baby boomers.
Healthcare is going to continue to be a hot area. There's always demand there.
The report also found big gains in construction, and chefs are in high demand as more Americans eat out. Then there's the rise of the gig economy.
I think with the advent of Uber and Airbnb and other organizations, you do see more people taking on freelance assignments. And I think that's a trend that's going to continue to grow.
Taking this class, learning the technology, is going to give me the ability to continue this as a career for forever, till I retire at hopefully 54.
It's possible. Web developers make 40% more than the average worker, over $72,000 a year. Brooke Silva-Braga for CBS News, New York.
Coming up.
Good evening. This is 60 Minutes.
60 Minutes turns 50 on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Check out CBS News Radio podcasts. From hard news to features, there's lots available from our app. Listen to experts like John Dickerson each Sunday on Face the Nation or Anthony Mason every weeknight on the CBS Evening News. There's the World News Roundup, America's longest-running network newscast, and the Weekend Roundup, our Week in Review magazine show. It's all available from CBSNewsRadio.com or on our app for iOS and Android.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. There's new details about the math teacher who stopped a student gunman inside an Illinois high school.
We're all probably scared to come back. We
We need other students to make sure that they're comfortable.
Jenny Hudspath and friends spent Thursday decorating Mattoon High School to comfort classmates who fled the shooting in terror. And to honor Angela McQueen, a teacher now being hailed as their hero.
We've got a little balloon that says you're number one.
She saved
so many lives.
I have a 911 call. Shots fired at the high school.
McQueen and hundreds of students were in the school cafeteria Wednesday when a student opened fire.
Four shots were heard. The subject armed with a shotgun. I had a caller advising white male, white t-shirt.
I could see the bullets basically shattering in one of the pillars in the middle of the cafeteria.
One student was struck in the hand and chest. He's now in good condition. His mother posting on Facebook, "We are very blessed. It's not worse." She described McQueen lunging for the shooter's arm, forcing it upward. He fired five or six more rounds into the ceiling as she took him down.
When she saw the situation and, you know, okay, this kid's going to kill somebody if I don't do something, so she just took action. But she's
Barbara McQueen is Angela's mother.
I don't think she even gave it a thought, because when she saw the gun, I'm sure it was just like, oh my goodness, we're not going to have another Sandy Hook. She just reacted instinctively.
McQueen was a high school basketball star, a power forward who followed her parents into teaching. She's been at Mattoon now for 17 years.
Mrs. McQueen is Chuck Norris, basically. Pretty much stuff
she's
like that.
Hero.
She's a hero, too.
Angela McQueen's mother told us she's not yet ready to speak on camera. The police chief here told us that Mattoon High School recently underwent active shooter training. As part of that training, confrontation is considered a strategy of last resort, but if needed, should focus on disrupting the shooter's ability to aim. According to witnesses, that's exactly what Angela McQueen did. Tony DeCopel, CBS News, Mattoon, Illinois.
One endangered bird is on the rebound in California, according to scientists monitoring the species' survival. More from CBS News correspondent Pam Coulter.
Looks like there will be far more than 3 days of the condor. Wildlife experts say the endangered California condor is making a slow but steady comeback in the wild. 3 decades after the giant bird nearly went extinct. Biologists credit captive breeding programs and the reduced use of lead ammunition near condor feeding grounds. There are about 450 condors, including 270 in the wild, in California, Arizona, Utah, and Mexico. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
The watchdog Government Accountability Office says airfares are down. But don't get too excited, reports CBS's Jim Shenevy.
The Government Accountability Office says base airfares are now lower than before the airlines began charging fees for bags, reservation changes, priority boarding, and other services. But the fees more than make up for the cheaper fares, meaning travelers are spending more overall. The GAO says airlines lowered fares to appear more competitive and then made more money by tacking on the charges. The airlines collected nearly $1.2 billion in bag fees alone during the second quarter, a record, and the fifth consecutive quarter that bag fee revenues surpassed the $1 billion mark. Jim Shenevy, CBS News.
Goodbye to a fighter. Here's correspondent Steve Kathan.
He was known as the Bronx Bull, a middleweight champ with an iron jaw.
Jack LaMotta gives indications of being a bit weary from the pounding. But of course, don't let that fool you.
His record was impressive, 83 wins, 19 losses, and 4 draws. But it was also marred by his admission that he threw about for the mob in 1947. After retiring, LaMotta did some acting, and his memoir was turned into the acclaimed film Raging Bull. Robert De Niro portraying LaMotta as a man who was also violent outside the ring.
Come on, Jack.
I'm going to get hold of that dog, and I'm going to eat it for lunch. You hear what I'm saying? You hear me, Larry?
After attending the movie premiere, LaMotta turned to his ex-wife and said he couldn't believe he'd been that bad. She replied, "No, you were worse." Steve Kathan, CBS News.
At some TGI Fridays, takeout won't mean BYOB.
Next time you're ordering takeout...
At Fridays, we're killing the clock.
You might be able to order a side of booze. TGI Fridays says it will begin offering alcoholic beverages with online food orders through its app in November. The pilot program kicks off in Dallas. Plans are to eventually expand throughout Texas and other states. Customers will have to show a driver's license or state ID card to delivery drivers. Since those drivers will have to stop at liquor stores and then restaurants, Friday says getting your food may take a little longer. Liquor accounts for about a quarter of Friday sales. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Star Trek Discovery beams onto CBS this weekend. Here's correspondent Steve Futterman from L.A.
Whether it's been on television or the big screen, Star Trek has been around for more than a half century. On Sunday on CBS comes the newest Star Trek incarnation, Star Trek Discovery. And the Star Trek fans, the Trekkies, are ready.
We're all really hoping to love it. We're looking forward to it.
You're giving it a good chance.
Yes, exactly. We're cautiously optimistic. We want it to be good.
Akiva Goldman is one of the executive producers. This Star Trek, he says, will cover a period of time that's never been explored.
Our show takes place 10 years before the original series. And so we exist at a time that the fans know something about, but not too much.
Many of the actors are longtime Star Trek fans. Doug Jones plays Lieutenant Saru.
I was born in 1960, and as a six-year-old boy, I was watching William Shatner, see him on network television in its first run. Star Trek has been a part of my life ever since.
And the actors all know the fervent Star Trek fan base will closely be watching every episode. Sonequa Martin-Green.
We love how passionate the fans are. We love how meticulous they are. We love their attention to detail.
Some members of the original Star Trek are watching with great anticipation, including the original Captain Kirk, William Shatner.
It's a noble enterprise. Star Trek is really something very special, and I embrace it.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
It streams on CBS All Access online.
Good evening. This is 60 Minutes. It's a kind of a magazine for television, which means it has the flexibility and diversity of a magazine adapted to broadcast journalism.
And if this broadcast does what we hope it will do, it will report reality.
But we do think this is sort of a new approach. We realize, of course, that new approaches are not always instantly accepted.
We'll see. I'm Mike Wallace.
We will indeed. I'm Harry Reasoner.
Finally this weekend, 60 Minutes marks its 50th year on television. Sunday evening, it'll feature Oprah Winfrey's debut as a special contributor. That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever, to weekendroundup at cbsnews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.